The Hard Shoulder on Newstalk.
With Nissan Subscribe and Drive. No deposit, no compromise, no fuss. Find out more at nissan.ie.
And this is The Hard Shoulder with Anton in for Kieran. The former Myanmar leader Aung San Suu Kyi has been sentenced to 4 years in prison for dissent against the military and breaking coronavirus restrictions. And that sentence today has been reduced to 2 years. However, the charges that she is facing for a number of other accusations could see her potentially facing jail for life. To talk about this and to remind us of Aung San Suu Kyi's story, I'm joined by Colm O'Gorman, who is Executive Director of Amnesty International. And Colm, I cast my mind back, I think about 10 years, to a picture of you and she side by side in Dublin, both delighted, and a piece that you wrote talking about the significance of what she meant to Myanmar and what she meant as an individual. Before we look at what happened subsequent to that, can you just remind us of why she was viewed as such an idol at that point?
Well, she was certainly viewed as a human rights icon and as an icon as a prisoner of conscience. She had spent many decades at that point under house arrest. She was a pro-democracy campaigner in Burma, in Myanmar, for many, many years. And just prior to when she travelled to Ireland in 2013 to the event that we held in Dublin, she had finally been released. And the first relatively free and open elections had taken place in Myanmar, and the party that she led had won that election. Now, the constitution in Myanmar, which was put in place by the military before they allowed those elections, did certain things, like, for instance, it barred her specifically from ever becoming president or prime minister. It said that any person who had children who was born overseas and couldn't hold a head of government office. That was effectively a method used to prevent her from becoming the leader of government.
Although, in reality, as I understand it,
she was de facto leader.
It made no real difference.
Yeah. So yeah, she was the de facto leader. So when Amnesty had awarded her one of our highest awards, the Ambassador of Conscience Award, some years earlier, and finally when she was free, on a visit to Europe, she came to Dublin and was awarded that. Now, one of the things that she said, and this is something that when we then sadly had to take the decision to withdraw that designation or that award from her back in 2018, she said to us here in Dublin that we should not take either our eyes or our minds off us, the people of Myanmar, and help us to be the country where hope and history merges. And that's something certainly that we took very seriously. We did before she got here, and we've continued to do so since. And sadly, that took us to a point where Aung San Suu Kyi was the person that we had to challenge for her failure to speak out for the Rohingya when they were being targeted and subjected to ethnic cleansing by the state of Myanmar.
Now, this is a Muslim minority within the country, isn't that right?
Exactly, yeah. Many people may remember a couple of years ago, there was an assault perpetrated, like an ongoing assault that amounted to ethnic cleansing against the Rohingya population in Myanmar. We were seeing villages being burned to the ground, women and girls raped and assaulted, boys and men being killed. I mean, it was an appalling set of violations. And not only did Aung San Suu Kyi not speak out against those violations, but she seemed to either deny the gravity and scale of the atrocities, and worse yet, defend the government of Myanmar when they were being held.
In hindsight then, Colm, without wishing to be offensive, how did you, Amnesty, the Nobel Committee and so many others around the world, how did you get it so wrong about her?
I don't think we got it wrong at the time. I mean, at the time that she was both given the Nobel Peace Prize but also given that award by Amnesty International, she was somebody who had campaigned at great personal cost for human rights, for democracy and for freedom in Myanmar, and with great effect, ultimately, when it looked like democracy was being restored in Myanmar. At that time, these were the right things
but
to do.
But did it blind you to other aspects of her character which might have been evident?
I don't think they were evident at that stage, because she had never held power or authority at that particular point. When she then failed to speak out, first of all, Amnesty engaged directly with her to try to get her to speak out, to acknowledge exactly what was happening in Myanmar, recognizing that, first of all, she was de facto head of government, but actually the way that the constitution of Myanmar was established by the military, the head of government and the civilian arm of government has no authority or control over police or security forces. That still rested with the military. Nevertheless, that in no way excused either her failure to speak out and acknowledging and condemn what was happening, But then critically, sometime after that, when she effectively appeared to defend, and when I say appeared, she didn't appear to defend, she appeared at international tribunals and defended the state of Myanmar against charges of crimes against humanity.
Is there any chance, Colin, that she will, in not speaking for her in her absence, but that she might say, well, look, I'm dealing with a country which is in the early stages of democracy. It is still riven with strife. It is made up of a whole series of internecine conflicts and tribalism. And I'm trying to balance realpolitik with the move to decent democratic government. And if I did what you asked, it would be an entirely Pyrrhic victory.
It would be one thing, I suppose, you could make that argument if she had simply been silent. But when she then began to defend the military action there, when her administration began to actively stir up hostility against the Rohingya, labelling them, for instance, as terrorists, accusing them of burning their own houses, or saying that these were false allegations of rape. And at the same time, then you saw state media saying things like they were referring to the Rohingyas as detestable human fleas and thorns, which must be pulled out. That goes ways beyond realpolitik. This then amounts to defending ethnic cleansing, defending appalling human rights abuses. I mean, again, people being burnt out of their homes, burnt alive, raped, murdered, displaced. These are appalling human rights violations. There's no realpolitik that in any way explains or excuses a failure to condemn or to act to prevent those kinds of human rights abuses, even in the limited space within which she could operate politically or legally within her own country. So there's no excusing that. But I have to say, Anton, you know, what concerns us more than anything else now, as we know, since the coup of the 1st of February last year, and then the crackdown on opposition to that coup, the military in Myanmar has killed more than 1,300 people now, and it's arrested more than 10,000 people. It's understandable that Aung San Suu Kyi is getting this attention given what's happened today, but there are more than 10,000 people who are facing exactly the kind of circumstances that Aung San Suu Kyi is facing. And I would imagine that many of them may well find themselves experience even much harsher.
But this is one of the things that I wanted to ask, was one of the things that she was able to do in her previous iteration, pre-2012, when she was still riding high in international popularity and respect, was act as a lightning rod for pro-democracy and pro-reform forces and pressures internationally. Has she now so entirely lost that capacity that the entire state feels, or rather the entire military junta feels, they can behave in a way that they haven't been allowed to do for 10 years because the international community has turned its back?
Well, I mean, if the international community is only going to speak out when one person, albeit somebody who became totemic, really, of the struggle in Myanmar and experiences human rights violations, then that's a fairly damning indictment of the international community. I mean, her own administration failed to repeal some of the repressive laws that are now being used against her. So she defended the use of those laws in the past. For instance, there were two Reuters journalists who were prosecuted and imprisoned for their work documenting a military massacre in Myanmar, using exactly the same laws that are now being used against her. And when that was happening, there were calls for administration to repeal those laws, and they failed to do so. I think the critical point now is that we have to avoid a situation where we ignore what's happening in Myanmar because Aung San Suu Kyi has fallen from grace. I mean, Aung San Suu Kyi mattered as a symbol of something, as an example of something. There are 10,000 examples of that currently in prison in Myanmar, and that's what we have to focus on. The people of Myanmar, again, just remembering what Aung San Suu Kyi said to us when she was here, she said, don't take your eyes off us, don't forget about us. The us in that is the people of Myanmar, the people of Burma. And there are very many people here in Ireland who for many decades campaigned to try to ensure that human rights would be respected in Myanmar. That will continue, regardless of how flawed Aung San Suu Kyi has turned out to be as a political leader once she was in a position of power. And that's where our focus has to be.
Can I go back briefly to what you said about the very laws that she failed to repeal being the ones that are now being used against her? Does that mean that in respect of her current sentence and the potential further sentencing she may face, depending on how that progresses, that your view would be she's hoisted by her own petard and leave her at it?
Not remotely. The prosecution of Aung San Suu Kyi is completely unacceptable. The targeting of her in this way on trumped up imagined charges is entirely wrong. She should not be subject to this prosecution, and she certainly should not be imprisoned, nor should any of the other people who are being persecuted and prosecuted simply because they have opposed a military coup. Neither her nor anybody else should be facing these kinds of sanctions in Myanmar, and they must be brought to an end. And with that in mind, I mean, the thing that we need to see now, for instance, is the UN Security Council imposing a comprehensive global arms embargo on Myanmar. That's critical. And the situation in Myanmar has to be referred to the International Criminal Court. Rather than focusing on the personalities of this, we have to focus on what's happening to the people of that country. That's why we have to see real and meaningful action that we have not seen thus far from the international community. So an arms embargo on the military in particular, again, 1,300 people have been killed, more than that have been killed since the military started cracking down on opposition to their takeover of the country, and more than 10,000 people arrested. Those people have to be freed, and the international community has to step up and ensure that it applies every possible pressure, the full range of financial sanctions that can be applied to leaders in Myanmar now who are responsible for these violations, but also an arms embargo that can stop fueling this violent repression and deadly repression of people who are opposing the coup at the moment in Myanmar.
May I finish on just one personal note? I mentioned the piece that you wrote in praise of her back in the day. You were also one of the people to be publicly vocal in criticism, one of the early people to be publicly vocal in criticism of her when she failed to act in respect of the people who were being subjugated by the regime. What level of personal disappointment do you feel?
Do you know what? It's not. I don't. Personal disappointment is not one to put it. Am I desperately disappointed that somebody who could have done so much has turned out to be unprepared to do what's simply right? Of course I am. But that's the kind of, frankly, disappointment that we. If people didn't fail to uphold human rights, we wouldn't need to exist, and that would be a very, very good thing. Of course, it's disappointing for a huge number of people who campaigned for years for Aung San Suu Kyi that she turned out herself to be so flawed in how she exercised power. That's enormously disappointing. I think, quite frankly, it's an appalling betrayal of the millions of people around the world who stood up for her human rights, that she was unwilling to stand up for the human rights of her own people, and that she was prepared instead to see an ethnic grouping within her own country as somewhat less than human, as less than citizens of the state. Now, they can't be citizens of the state because of the level of discrimination that they face. That's appalling. That's a crushing disappointment for an awful lot of people. But I have to say, I don't particularly take it personally.
Colm, thank you very much. That is Colm O'Gorman, who is Executive Director of Amnesty International. If you want to get in touch with the show, you can text us at 53106 at a cost of 30 cents.